Hey guys, welcome to Sled Talk. Appreciate you guys tuning in. I would like to take a second of your time and introduce this season's title sponsor is Bikeman Performance. So they've decided to jump on board and help push the podcast. And if you're unaware, Bikeman is the elite level when it comes to aftermarket performance parts on your sled. So be sure to check out their site, link in the description. And without further ado, let's jump into the show.
Stop, collaborate, and listen. Smasher's back with a brand new invention. Something grabs a hold of him tightly, flow like a harpoon, daily and nightly. Whatever to stop, yo, I don't know. Turn off the lights, and sled sins will glow.
Oh! There we go. Dropping There's the intro Dropping to it. Sled Talk Part 2 with Chris Kaltenbacher, a.k.a. Smasher. Shay's back on this one again. Smasher, thank you for being here for another episode. We just came from lunch, and yeah, we're going to jump right back into this one. I think topic of conversation for part two. Smasher, I'm going to let you decide. We'll go the route of Iron Dog, or we'll go the route of Boondockers and some other stuff.
Which Iron Dog's off the hook.
Let's go. I mean,
you want to go? We go. We get to go off Iron Dog.
Let's go into Iron Dog. So, let's, I guess, take us through, like, the beginning of your interests, like, what piqued your interest to even begin to pursue the idea of doing this crazy thing called the Iron Dog.
So, it stems back from a lot of years, like, well, we could go way back before the Stone Age. Todd Palin and J.D. Palin are hometown boys of Dillingham, Alaska, where I grew up. Mm-hmm. So even before they started, there was the Braswell boys, Leon and Gerald Braswell, that had wanted to do the Iron Dog. And then the Palins did the Iron Dog. And I kind of followed along with the Palins wanting to do the Iron Dog. And they did the Iron Dog. And then they won and blah, blah, blah. And so I kind of sparked up an interest. Like, this is something cool. Like, this is off the hook, you know, for them to do something like that. 2,500 miles across the state of Alaska, the frozen Arctic is just, you know, it's kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I'd always wanted to do a part of this. I'd be a part of this and do something with this. And, you know, I kind of played around with the idea, and I talked to a few buddies about it, you know, talking to them, hey, would you guys want to be interested in doing this? And everybody's kind of like, you know, how would this happen? Could we do it? You know, and it's cold and, you know, there's a lot to go into it behind the scenes, a whole lot. Right. And so, Dustin Pancari from Climb had talked to me about this guy, Roger Brown. I'm kind of skipping ahead, but so it's probably been 15 years or so that I've been wanting to do this.
Okay.
So Dustin had pitched this to me, like, hey, you know, Roger Brown is part of the ambassador group and would like, he's looking for people, you need to contact him and blah, blah, blah. And so Dustin had time to kind of talk to, Roger about it, and I thought, you know, man, hey, if the opportunity ever arises, I'm going. Mm-hmm. Like, I want in on this. And so Roger Brown calls me and says, hey, I heard that you would like to do the Iron Dog. And I was like, I'm in. Like, I want to do this. And he's like, well, we're not racing, we're the ambassador, and it didn't matter. Sure. As long as I was in part of it and got to experience it, you know, that's the direction I wanted to go. I mean, this is something that I don't know, just infatuated with. Something other than what I've done, and you're hauling rear end across the state of Alaska, you know, sub-zero temperatures, and you get to go to all the villages, and growing up in a village, it seemed kind of cool. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we planned it, and Roger invited me up. Dustin was part of it, two Polaris engineers, and away we went. And Roger Brown, this guy's a stud. I mean, he's a tough Alaskan, this boy. Yep. He just came off knee surgery. I think he had a meniscus, Terry told me. So he was giving me his sled. Arctic FX kicked in on that. SLP kicked on that. Volk kicked in on that. Who else kicked on that? Sled Solutions kicked on that. So they all kicked in some parts for that. And they built my, and Roger built my sled. Mike, he did everything for me. This guy built my sled. He got me ready. You know, he told me everything. I mean, this guy took care of me like I was a little kid. Yep. It was very cool. Dustin was going to be part of it, part of Climb. You know, Climb, of course, of us, as of always, they took care of us, got our jackets for us, all matching gear. Then we had two Polaris engineers. They were all riding four strokes, and away we went to Alaska, man. And just he, like, smiles, like, yeah. I'm this is the coolest. This is the coolest experience. So, yeah. we get up there, and you know, as time goes on, you know, I'm contacting Roger and going about this, and you know, like, what do we need for this, you know? And so, you know, you get the list, and you got to go through an 18-page application to get involved in the into the Iron Dog. You got to have your CPR card, you got to have your medical card, you got to have it notarized by a notary. So it's no joke. Like, they're trying to weed out the people that don't want it. You got to watch I think it was a six-hour rookie thing by Mike Morgan and Chris Olds about, you know, being a rookie and, you know, all that. And so watch all that, you know, and start packing my stuff. And I'm talking to Chris Olds and Mike Morgan and Dustin and Roger, you know, what to pack. And, you know, as a mountain rider, you know, you bring a lot of gloves, you bring a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
So anyways, I get all my stuff packed. Man, I could go into details for hours on this thing and get up to Alaska. And, you know, it's like coming to, like, this is really going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
We go to Todd Palin's house. We start getting the sleds ready. And we go out on our first sale. So we work on some sleds the first night. And you want me to keep going on this, correct? Just keep rolling with it.
This, so, this whole episode is dedicated to this. So, take us through it.
Dude, I feel like a rock star. Like,
you are, brother.
So we go to Todd Palin's house, which is really cool. Todd Palin was super cool. And we go to his house. We work on the sleds with the Polaris engineers. We get it ready. And, you know, we go out on the first ride. And being from Alaska, you know, they're like, hey, we're putting on face masks and this and that. And I'm like, oh, it's not that cold, you know. And as a mountain rider, you know, you go out in the cold and – you know, it's cold for a little bit, but you start sweating and blah, blah, blah. So I don't put on a face mask like a ding-dong I am. And I got frostbite on my cheeks.
I've never seen the photo.
Yep.
Just dumb, you know. The first day. And so we go out and a test ride, and everything's good. And then the next day we go in, we do all our checkpoints. And, you know, we're in there with the Iron Dog guys, and we go through all the stuff. And
so sorry to cut you off, but what type of sled?
I got Roger Brown's 850 XCR.
Okay.
Ooh, she's smoking.
Yeah.
Oh, that thing is fun as heck. You know, Roger and Dustin and two of the Polaris engineers were on the new Polaris four strokes, which were a little different, a little heavier, but you know, they were on those. And so my sled, I got SOP skis, SOP weights, SOP clutching, Arctic FX wrap. Like, this thing, it's a mover.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we go in and we do all our checkpoint stuff, you know, at the pregame, and we take care of all that. And then, you know, race day comes, and it's really coming to, like, dude, we're really doing this. Like, this is the Iron Dog.
Yeah.
And as the ambassador group, we got to go out first, and we were ahead of the pro class by 2 days.
Mm-hmm.
And so we get to go out first, and you know, it's cold, and I think that day, the day we went to breakfast, we're getting ready to go, I think the nerves really started to hit me.
Sure.
Like, this is 2,500 miles across the state of Alaska. You know, you don't know what to expect. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a real long ways on a 2,500 miles on a snowmobile.
About, like, 7 days, 7-8 days?
It was supposed to be, I think we were supposed to be at 10 days. We were supposed to be at 10 days because we were taking... We were ahead of the pro class. Mm-hmm. So we were supposed to be ahead of the pro class. We had three presentations. You know, there were certain places we needed to be at certain times.
Yeah.
We were kind of breaking trail, making sure the trail was good. You know, yada, yada, yada. The first day we take off, the weather is beautiful. A little cold, but it was beautiful. And we get 30 miles into the trip, and a sled breaks down. We got a helicopter crew there from I can't remember their name, but they were there, the Hybrid Films, and they were there filming and for Polaris, and sled breaks down. They got to tow the sled back 30 miles, and they leave me, Dustin, and Mike Brown, and the two Polaris engineers and Roger Brown go back to go fix the sled, and the three of us keep going to Puntilla, and we take off, and it's a great ride, like, beautiful. You know, we get to Squintna, and we text Roger Brown, like, hey, can we keep going? Like, this is this is too cool. Hey, you know what? Dustin was the first person to get stuck on that ride.
Hey, Dustin.
He was the first person. He went to go turn around at Squintna because they were trying to film us coming in, and he got stuck. So he was the first person to get stuck. Oh, yeah. Well, some people just weren't born to ride.
That's funny.
Now, so anyways, we get to Squintna, and I texted Roger Brown, like, hey, we're going to keep going. You know, can we keep going? He's like, yeah, you know, go on to Puntilla. And so me and Mike and Dustin, keep going. And then Roger and the two players, engineers, they show up about 10 o'clock that night. And in Puntilla, you get a nice meal, a nice, you know, nice place to sleep. It's like a cabin and with a stove in it, and we all go to sleep. And the next day, you know, Roger's like, hey, we need to get up early. We need to get going. We need to get McGrath quick. So I think we were the second team out. And we woke up, it was snowing, you know, it's just so intriguing every morning. I'm like, mm-hmm. ready to go. Like, mm-hmm. what do we have today? You know, it's cold, you're packing all your stuff, we eat a little breakfast and we take off, and we catch up to the other group, and we go through the lower Kuskokwim up through the mountain, the Alaska mountain range, and one of the Polaris guys smoked an A-arm.
Oh, no.
So that slowed us down, and of course, you know, everybody's passing us, and me, I'm kind of, you know, I get competitive. I'm like, oh, this is embarrassing, dude. We're just passing us. Like, they're waving at us. Yeah, we're like, yeah, we're fine. And so they all pass us, and we get the A-arms, you know, squared away, and we start going. And then the day clears up. You know, you're going up the Kuskokwim. It's just, the mountains are just incredible.
Yeah.
Like, sick. They're just massive, and you're going up this river. I posted one on my Instagram. I mean, it doesn't mean a lot to most people, but if you really watch it, it's just incredible. And so we go up, and we get close to Nikolai, and Roger smokes an A-arm, another A-arm, so we're fixed that. And a couple planes buzz us, and we're supposed to be in McGrath already. And we get to McGrath, I think, at like 10:30 that night.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is our second night. So our second night, you know, we're supposed to be already there. And we get there, and everybody else has already been there for hours, and they're mm-hmm. chilling and relaxing. And Roger's like, hey, we're getting up early. We got to make it all the way to Unalakleet, which was, I think it was 430 miles.
Oh, my gosh. Holy smokes.
That's what Dustin was saying, and a couple of your guys were like, what the heck, you know? And so we wake up the next day, and I'm ready. Like, I am so excited. Maybe I'm just not right in my head or something.
A little twisted.
Yeah. So we go, and like, there's so much. I mean, I could go into hours of detail about this. Like, you're going down this, it's an old mining town, and there's this road, and the willow trees are grown mm-hmm. over. So you're doing like 80 miles an hour. I'm following Roger on this four stroke. So I was right behind Roger, and these willow trees are smacking against your sled, and you're just going like a bat out of hell, and just going. And pretty soon there's drifts, and we had one guy that struggled a little bit. He was getting stuck off and on. So Dustin and Roger had said, hey, Smasher, you drop back and help. And I was like, oh, thanks for choosing me.
Right.
See ya. Sweet. Yeah, I'll go in the back and help out. And so we keep going. We go to Rudy, and then we go up the Yukon up to Galena and Caltag. And, you know, it's 432 miles. Just that's incredible.
Crazy.
Yeah, going up the Yukon River. I think I was following Roger, and my rule of thumb was at that speed, you know, was doing about 80. So 2 seconds was too close, but 3 seconds was about right. Any more than 3 seconds, if you were 4 seconds, you'd lose sight of him because of the snow dust.
Sure.
So I try to keep 3 seconds on me. So I'm basically just watching his head and his shoulders. Like, if I saw him stand up, then I needed to stand up. I needed to calculate, you know, how far it was. You know, so at one point, like, something came by. I was like, what the hell was that? It was like a stump in the river.
Oh.
I was like, dude, if I would have been off like 6 inches, I would have smoked that. Like, it's over.
Oh.
Like, the oh poop times, amount of times on that trail that I was like, that was close, man. That was a little too close. You know, it was a little crazy. But so we go that whole day. We were going from I believe it was McGrath to Poor Man. There's another one in there between. I can't remember the name, but there's these guys, and they passed us. Like, we were going. We were leading the whole day. Like, Roger had us the whole day. We were cutting down trees. We were going through. Like, we were cruising on this trail at like 60 miles an hour, and then all of a sudden we get to where the snow was so deep, and Roger's sled just went Titanic verticals. I'm like, oh, this is going to be a long day. This is going to be a long day. So we lead. So Roger leads us through this area all the way to Poor Man. You can't see. I took a windshield to the throat.
Ugh.
It bruised my throat. Like, whenever I would swallow, it would hurt.
Yeah.
Like, I was just couldn't see. I saw Roger. You know, we got stuck a few times in the river bottom, not the river, in the creek bottoms. You know, it's just brutal. You couldn't see. It was white out. It was blowing. Anyways, we lead the whole day. We get to this one little horseshoe corner, and these two guys on these skidoos come by, and they go past us. And in my head, I'm like, Roger, get him, you know, like I'm like a little kid. Like, get him, dad, don't let him pass this, dad. And the second guy almost gets stuck, and Roger kind of creeps forward, and I'm like, get past him, you know, I want him to go by him. Like, don't let him pass us. Like, dude, I will straight up punch him in the throat. Like, let's go. And so so he lets him go, and then they get stuck going up this hill, the poor man. And in my head, I'm like, oh, dad's pissed, dude. We're going to get by him now. Like, dad's mad. I'm like, do it, Roger. And I'm like right on Roger's tail end. I'm like, ream, 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 like a little kid. I wanted to go by these guys so bad. We never do. We get to poor man, and the guys at poor man were, you know, they were complaining about, you know, whatever, about the trail not being perfect or whatever. But, dude, you're in Alaska.
Yeah, sure.
It's Alaska.
Yeah, no kidding.
So those two take off from poor man, and in my head, like, I'm on my sled. I'm ready to go. Like, Roger, let's go. These guys are beating us. You know, and Roger is someone that's been – he was the president of the Iron Dog. You know, he's the treasurer of the Iron Dog. So he's been around the Iron Dog a long time. He knows a lot. So Roger takes off and goes down the mountain, and for some reason I was lagging behind. I don't know why. But I was hauling balls on that 850, and I missed my corner.
Oh, no.
Missed my corner, went straight off, and I didn't get stuck, though. I did the old whip around and got back on the trail. But, dude, I hit the brake, and I was like, oh, I'm not making this corner. Off into the willows I went, and I made it around. And eventually we catch two guys on the skidoos, and we pass them. And I'm like, yeah, dude, we win. You know, we're winning. And then one of our guys gets stuck in the snowdrifts. I'm like, man, come on. We got to go. We're supposed to be winning. And we eventually make it to McGrath, but to Unalakleet. And on the way to Unalakleet, I mean, we've all driven a lot, right? And you know what? Sometimes you're doing the head bob. You're like, I'm so tired. I was doing that on a snowmobile.
Jeez.
Like, Kaltenbacher, you're falling asleep on a snowmobile. How is this even How is this even legit?
Yeah.
Like, I was so tired. So we almost get to McGrath, and at one point, one of the guys had gotten stuck like a mile behind us, and one of the guys was like, hey, you got to go back. I was like, I got to go back?
Me?
And Dustin and Roger, they were gone, dude. They just kept going. So I went back for this guy, and the trail was, it was probably like a 3 foot, it was probably a 3 foot bank. Like, you couldn't go off it, and trail sleds just don't go off the.
Yeah.
Because what's the track length?
It's a like a 130, what was that, 132, 136, okay. 120, 129 with like a quarter inch paddle. So you go off and it's just like it's nothing. Yeah. You know, it just really isn't. So at one point I had come head to head with Roger Brown, and I was like, hey, back up a little, because I thought, you know, if he backs up a little, or I asked him to come forward. So I figured if I couldn't get around him, at least I'd get back on the trail.
Yeah.
And I haven't posted that video yet because it doesn't look like anything. Actually, I think I did post it, but I was like, it doesn't look like anything. But it's kind of scary because these willows are it's just deep. And these trail sleds, when you give them a pull, they just don't go. Like a mountain sled, you get 1, 2, 3, and you pull and it goes.
Yeah.
But not the trail sleds, they don't go. So anyways, I go back and get this guy, and we take off. We make it to Unalakleet at like 2:33 in the morning.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it was 19 hours and 432 miles.
So this is day
This is day one.
Oh, my God.
Two. This is day three.
Okay.
This is day three. Okay. And so we make it to Unalakleet. One of my high school buddies I didn't even know was there. I was like, oh, my goodness. Chances. Yeah.
I think I remember seeing that on your story.
Yeah, I was like, Wes Jones? He's like, yeah. So we stay in this, it was the old post office, and they give us some smoked salmon, some candy bars, stuff that you just eat. You know, you're starving, and the smoked salmon from the villagers are.
Oh, man.
Prime. Oh, had jalapenos in it.
Yum.
Dude, ridiculous. So good. Yeah. Yeah. And at that point, man, you're willing to eat anything. Oh, you know, you're so hungry. And so, yeah, then that day. So then from there, from Unalakleet, we went all the way to Koyuk the next day. And then from Koyuk, we went to Kotzebue. And so then the next day wasn't too bad. It's pretty legit. You go across the ocean and stuff like that. That was kind of crazy. I was kind of hoping. And Dustin, you know, he's so afraid of ice. Like, he doesn't like water. Like, he is crazy scared about water.
Okay.
You know, and so I think I was messing with him. Like, dude, I hope you don't fall in. You know, just messing with him. We go across the ocean, and we meet up with a native guy, and he kind of takes us across, and we make it all the way to Koyuk, and then Koyuk to from Koyuk to Kotzebue was kind of crazy. cold. One of our guys, Mike Buck, had, out of Buckland, had wrecked, hit an ice heave at like 65 miles an hour. Yeah, it hurt his back and his ribs, so we could only go so fast. And it was cold. It was so cold. Like, I had on every layer that you could possibly think of. You know, we pulled up, and I think it was Buckland and Roger and Dustin are taping their faces up. Like, well, if we're taping our faces up, this has got to be it's pretty bad. You know, so you tape up with the tape, and then you go across, and it felt like God was taking Kotsubi and pulling it from us. Like, you look at your 7S, and you're like, okay, we're 100 miles. And then, like, 4 hours later, you're like, it's still 100 miles.
Jeez.
Like, dude, hey, come on, man. It ain't funny anymore. You know, like, come on, you know. Yeah. And poor Mike, you know, he was pretty hurt, so we couldn't go too fast. So, you know, at one point we stopped, and we're like doing air punches and dancing around.
Warming up, yeah.
Yeah, it was cold. Like, I had on every layer that you could think of. Anything you could think of, I had it on. You have to go across this lake that's 40 miles long, and it's like a like in a skiff. Well, I call it a skiff, like a boat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Boat's a skiff, you know, where you're hopping drift to drift to drift. And yeah, so on the whole way to Nome, basically, in my head, I was thinking, this is the Iron Dog? Like, I mean, you know, it's kind of tough. Like, you know, whatever. I mean, this is cool. You know, so, you know, put that on standby. So we get to Kotzebue, and, you know, the Iron Dog treats us like gods and put us in a beautiful hotel. And we go in, and Dustin's over sitting on his bed, you know, and he doesn't look real happy. And I'm like, hey, D, I say, you all right? You know, you good? And, you know, he's talking about some stuff. And he's like, man, I just like to be in my own bed with my wife, nice and warm. And I'm like, but dude, think about in 5 years. 5 years, we're going to get to talk about this, the adventure we have, how cold and nasty it was. And he looks over, he's like, you know, I don't share your enthusiasm. Like, I'm not where you're at. Like, I just like to be home. And
sure.
I'm happy to be to go in Nome and flying home. And, you know, I think that's when I realized, you know, there's something is a little different about me. Like, I'm so intrigued on this. You know, we could die out here. This is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So we meet up with Chris Olds and a couple other people, and we follow them all the way to Nome through an ice storm, and we're good.
Yep. Yeah, you're good.
We get all the way to Nome, and the day we come into Nome, they say that there's a storm coming in, and I'm thinking, okay, that was on a Tuesday. We should leave on Wednesday. You know, and the storm was pretty bad that was coming in. It was complete whiteout, and so so Roger decides, you know, Roger and the Iron Dog decide, hey, it's not good for us to leave on a Wednesday. Yeah, they were talking about yellow flagging the racers just because it was so bad. And so Thursday morning, so Wednesday it was pretty bad. They have the banquet whatsoever. And on Thursday we leave at 4 a.m. And then that night before we left on that, 4 a.m. We're getting up at 4 a.m. We're out, and they and Nome, they had this group in there that were given IVs.
Oh, you
know,
it was, geez,
like, for $100. I was like, you know what, I'll do an IV. Why not? It was the best decision.
I was going to say, that's probably a good decision right there.
Yeah. Everybody, a lot of the racers were doing it, getting IVs, you know, getting hydrated.
Yeah.
You don't realize how fast, like, at each checkpoint, I'm skipping all over the place, but at each checkpoint, Roger's like, you know, we're in a hurry. And and Chris Olds and Mike Morgan in their rookie class were talking about drink as much water as you can. So at every checkpoint, man, you could take, like, one of those waters and you could squeeze it in your mouth and it was gone.
Yeah.
And then for food-wise, I had these gummy bears, and I would shove my mouth full of gummy bears as much as I could just so – because you weren't eating a whole lot because you're on the move. And we had – you know, as a racer, you're moving anyways.
Yeah.
But as an ambassador, we were trying to make our checkpoints so we could make sure that we were there at a certain time. We had to have been to Kotzebue at a certain time, at Nome at a certain time. So we were doing all this stuff. And so anyways, we get to Nome, and – we're leaving that Thursday. Well, the night before we left, this kid, Michael, had come up to us. He's like, hey, listen, I heard you guys are leaving at 4 a.m. And he lived in White Mountain. And he was like, you know, can I ride with you guys to get home? And so Roger and the two players guys, everybody's like, yeah, you know, that's cool. And he's like, well, I'm having some problems with my lights. And one of the players engineers was like, hey, let me help you. So he goes and helps him that night. And we get his sled work and everything's good. So we leave from Nome. The next morning he shows up. His name's Michael, and we take off to White Mountain. We get to White Mountain, and, you know, we say our goodbyes. We talk to the gas guy, and this is where Alaska said, oh, yeah, you think it's easy to go to go to Nome.
Yeah.
Boom, dude.
Really?
Alaska slapped down. Yeah. So that storm came in, and, you know, the winds were bad. It warmed up a little bit. It had rained here and there. You know, it melted a lot of the snow. So after White Mountain, we had talked to this is where it gets real good. We had talked to the guy at White Mountain. He's like, yeah, you know, Gullivan Bay is fine. And so you got to go from White Mountain, you go across the bay to Gullivan, which is a little town, and you go across this little inlet. So basically, it's like a U, and then the ocean's out here, and it's just a little inlet, and you go across to White Mountain or to Gullivan. And so Chris Olds, which him and Mike Morgan had scratched because Mike Morgan had busted up his sled. So Chris Olds had ridden to Nome with a couple other guys just to get them to Nome to do their halfway because they were part of the expedition group. And so we had talked Chris Olds into taking one of the four strokes and riding it back Dustin's sled because Dustin lives from Nome.
Oh, yeah.
And we were like, sure. Hey, you know, come back with us. He's like, yeah, sure, that'd be a good time. So we talk him into it. So Chris Olds has become kind of our leader, and Roger had dropped back. Roger had always been our leader, but he'd trying to drop back, and I was always following Chris Olds because he's a four-time champ, so I wanted to learn something. So anyways, after we left White Mountain, I'm following Chris Olds, and we start to head across Gullivan Bay. So it's Chris Olds, myself, the two Polaris engineers, and then Roger Brown was in the back. We're cruising along at, like, I think I want to say it was like 65 miles an hour. I was sitting on my sled because it was 6:18 in the morning. So it was pitch black. Like, you can't see anything. I'm just following Chris, and it's all white. Next thing I know, the ground goes black. So black means water. So I see water, and I see Chris Olds. Like, I'm right behind Chris Olds, and I stand up. I stand up. I'm like, what? You know, we're going to use correct language. I was like, what the heck?
Yeah.
And I'm going, and I was wearing the Climb Edge goggles, and it had chrome on my edges.
Yep.
And I have my head turned just a little bit, and I could see headlights dropping behind me. I see, you know, one headlight, you know, another headlight, and I'm watching Chris Olds. Well, he's slowing down. Well, so I kind of get to the side of him because the spray is getting up, and your first instinct is to let out the throttle too. And I'm watching him, like, I'm looking at him going, what do you, like, let's go, bro. And I just see a sled go vertical, and it dumps off. So I pinch on the throttle. Well, being from Alaska, I know it's just I take that back. I think it's overflow because it's water being pushed in from the bay that's up on that. But in my head, you know, I'm like, oh, my God, you know, my friends are dying back here.
Yeah.
Do I turn to my left because I know that shore is to my left, but it's probably 25 miles off. Like, we're 25 miles off. You're going across this bay. Bro. Yeah. So I'm going, ran. I'm punching the throttle, and it's lifting the skis, and I'm coming down. Then out of my corner of my eye, I see a white spot and then another big white spot. So I pull over there, and I stop, and it's two hard-packed snow berms that's on there. So I stop on them. I rip off my helmet. I rip off my face mask. I grab my Oxbow light. I'm running back on these two patches. I'm yelling, Roger, Chris, Roger, Chris. And I'm thinking, I'm going to hear grown men crying, you know, like, what the, you know, we're dying out here. What do I do? You know, I don't have a buoy. They've got the rope.
Oh, my God.
So I'm freaking out. I'm
starting to sweat right now.
Oh, and I had grabbed my Garmin. I had grabbed my Garmin, and I was texting Dustin, like, hey, I think we need help. And I was like, do I hit the SOS? Do I panic? Do I hit the SOS? You know, what the heck do I do?
Hey, guys, welcome to Sled Talk. Appreciate you guys tuning in. I would like to take a second of your time and introduce this season's title sponsor is Bikeman Performance. So they've decided to jump on board and help push the podcast. And if you're unaware, Bikeman is the elite level when it comes to aftermarket performance parts on your sled. So be sure to check out their site, link in the description. And without further ado, let's jump into the show.
And lo and behold, here comes Chris Olds walking out of the water in his bunny boots. Just splashing away, just walking towards me. And, like, I was almost in tears. Like, I was so happy to see him. I'm like, oh, buddy, you know.
Yeah.
And he's like, we're good. And so he walks up. He's like, listen, you're dry. We're soaked. You stay here. I was like, okay, so and do what? Like, what am I supposed to do? And he's like, I'll go help Roger. So he starts. I've got video of it. He walks back out in the water like he's Jesus, just walks back out on the water. And, yeah. And away he goes. Well, my Oxbow light from the cold, you know, it had been in my bag. It went cold. So I ran back to my sled, and I grabbed my other Oxbow, and I came back, and I'm like, listen. And I don't see anybody. You know, your head starts playing tricks on you.
Oh, yeah.
Like, did I just hear the ice crack? I was like, I thought I heard the ice crack. Oh, and then at one point, I'm looking down at the water coming across the snow, and it's moving. I mean, it's moving pretty quick. I'm like, okay, is that the tide coming in? Is that the ice sinking? You know, I don't know, dude. This is my first time. And I don't see anybody. I'm yelling Chris. I'm yelling Roger. No one's answering me. I grab my Oxbow radio. I'm like on 911. Hey, do you guys hear me? Is anybody copying? Nothing. Nothing. So at one point, I was like, dude, I'm out of here. Like, I'm done. Like, I'm going back across. So I go and I put all my stuff back on. I turn the sled around as I punch it to go across the ice, you know, across. I start going. It just starts. So it's about a mile. We figured it was a little over a mile. I'm just water skipping. In my video, you can see, like, slush and ice chunks. And as I'm going, like, after about 200 feet, you see these two headlamps turn. It's Roger and Chris Olds looking at me. And I'm like, meow. I'm like, later, dudes. You know, peace out. So I make it all the way back to their side, and then two players, engineers, had their bags. You know, they're soaked, and they're walking towards land, and they're like, hey, we need to get to wood to start a fire. I'm like, okay, well, I can't leave the other two guys.
Yeah.
You know, I gotta wait here. And so then, you know, that all part comes kind of black for some reason. But, you know, we're all sitting there, and then pretty soon Roger and Dustin come walking out of the water, and then that's when Ackelstead and I forget the leaders – showed up, and it was 7:18, and Roger Brown's like, hey, we need help. And they're like, okay, well, we're off the clock at 7:18. You know, we're like, okay, we're all your witness to tell the race marshal, you know, and they got to help us.
Yeah.
So they take us back to that guy's Michael's house that we helped. Mm-hmm. We take it back to his house, and this guy and his wife, I think his name was Melody, but they brought us in, took us into their house. We were there for 6-7 hours, turned their bathroom into a drying area. Mm-hmm. And we just dried out all, because, I mean, everybody was soaked other than me. I was the only lucky one, but everybody's soaked, mm-hmm. completely soaked. So they got, so those people got, you know, other villagers, this guy named Henry, he's friends with me on Facebook. He's one of my friends now. He's like, dude, we're friends. We're brothers forever. Henry, and then a brother-in-law, and then a bunch of people gave chest waders and hip waders so we can go out there and get these sleds that were a mile off. They were a mile off, and these villagers came out and helped us like nothing all day. Mm.
That's wild.
All day. They got, you know, 300 feet of rope. They got toboggan sleds to put the sleds on them and pull them out of the water. They helped us. You know, we five of us put straps on our back, and we pulled these sleds to the water and the slush.
Good Lord.
And it was about thigh-high deep water. And, of course, I was the only one with hip waders, and I fell.
Oh, no.
I tripped. There was, like, some ice chunks.
Filled them.
Yeah. Yeah, I tripped and fell. So I fell in the water up to my arms, and then it filled my hip waders. Well, I didn't want to leave because, you know, everybody needed to be there to help.
Yeah.
So I told Roger, you know, I was like, hey, man, I fell in the water. And the native, or Henry, is like, hey, buddy, you better go back to town. And I was like, no, I'm native tough. He's like, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. So we were on the last sled, and we were pulling it to, so our sleds were over here, and we were pulling the sleds to where I had parked my sled. We were pulling up there. And I was like, let's just get this last sled up here, and then I'll go back to the village and warm up. So as we were pulling the last sled, you know, I was like, hey, we got to go. Like, I could feel my body core temperature drop in. I was cold. Like, my right foot was so damn cold. We get it up there. I'm like, hey, Roger, I'm out. Man, I can't feel my foot. I'm done. And he's like, you're out of here. And I told Henry, I was like, hey, Henry, I'm not native tough. I'm white man stupid. Like, I'm out. So as I'm walking across and back the bay, you know, I'm like throwing punches because I'm so cold. Yeah. I am freezing. And I get on my sled that, you know, and I go all the way back to village, which is like 10 or 15 miles. I get back there, and the whole time I'm thinking, man, I hope that wife is home because my foot was so cold. Like, I'm shivering. My boot's full of water. I get back there. The wife's not there. And I'm trying to get this boot off for, like, it felt like 30 minutes. I mean, I'm sure it was only 5 minutes, but I couldn't get it off because my foot was so cold. And, you know, I finally get the boot off. I'm struggling to get the boot off. Like, I kick a little bit. I'm sitting there for a little bit, and I kick it for a little bit, and I sit there for a little bit, and I finally get it off, and water's dumping on their floor. You know, I feel horrible, you know, and then they have a towel in the middle of their living room, and I just grab the towel, and I'm, like, in my Teton woolly.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. It's a real thin, and I'm standing there, and she comes to the door, and I'm just like, hi, I'm so sorry.
I'm sorry.
She's like, no problem. She gets me a blanket. She helps me. She's like, oh, that foot's going to hurt. And I was like, if I start crying, you know, it's just a cold. She's like, I understand. Yeah. It hurts so bad. So finally I warm up, and she gives me some other, you know, generic, you know, snow pants because all my stuff is soaked.
Yeah.
I mean, soaked to the bone, like, other than my jacket. And then I go back out, and by the time I get back out to where Roger and Chris and the other two players, engineers, are, and Henry, you know, it's snow raining. So the pants that she gave me are already soaked. So now they're dripping in my boots. I can't walk out in the snow. Poor Roger, you know, with his knee surgery and his meniscus tear, like he can't even walk. Mm-hmm. Like he's done. And the whole time, this whole time going on, I'm like, we're scratching. We're done. It's over. And I'm too afraid to say anything. But Chris Olds had kept a positive attitude. You know, he's kind of positive and kind of jumping around. And he was, and I was like, you know, I'm not going to say anything because I didn't want to scratch. That was my number one thing is I didn't want to scratch.
Yeah.
And so we finally get two of the sleds started. They get them skipped across. Two of the sleds wouldn't start. And Chris is like, okay, well, let's get them back to the shop. These villagers, they're volunteer firefighters, and they give us their shop. It's heated. We get them back there. We get oil for the four strokes. We change the oil. They all start up. And Chris is like, cool. Well, let's get some sleep. And we're off in the morning. I'm like, all right, man, here we go. And the family, Michael and his wife, like God bless them. They made us moose fried rice, chicken fried rice. They went to the store, bought us a bunch of food. I mean, these people.
That's dope.
Like the villagers of the whole race were just cool as heck.
Yeah.
Anything you needed, they were so happy. They make the Iron Dog. That's what's really intriguing me to go back as the villagers. So anyways, the next morning we take off and away we go. We make it back to, you know, and as we got farther and farther, you know, the way that we came across back, or the way that we came across from Unalakleet to Nome to Kotzebue, we couldn't go back because from the storms, the ocean water had pushed up on the ice, so all the rivers had opened, all the edge of the ocean had opened. So
jeez.
Talking to Chris Olds, you know, if you were on the Iron Dog and you're running a two stroke, you just pin it and skip it across it. But with the sleds we were on, you know, the four strokes, he was a little worried about it, and so we had to go all the way around. So it was bare tundra for like 4 hours, and like that whole time I'm like, this is just so cool, it's so intriguing to me, like I just wanted to keep going, like it was never miserable at times. And eventually you know, he kept skipping across water, kept skipping across water, and eventually I had posted it, but Chris had found a spot where you could skip from the frozen dirt across the open seawater to the ice to get across to go to Unalakleet. And that was kind of spooky. And at one point, you know, I think Chris Olds went across it and Roger's all, yeah. And I'm in my head, I'm like, well, why would you, yeah? Like, were you playing on him, like, sinking and dying? Like
were you worried about this?
Yeah, you were worried about this? Maybe this wasn't a good idea, you know? And so we make it across. We make it all the way to Unalakleet. And we almost get to Unalakleet. And we couldn't get across this river. And so Roger had called some of the natives from the town, and dude, they came out. You could see them for miles. You could see them going this way and going that way, and then coming at us and going back. And pretty soon, you see them jumping off the riverbanks across the water into the middle of the ice, and then across and through stumps and through slush. And they come over and they're like, "Hey, what's up?" They're like, "What's up?" You know what I mean? They're like, "Okay, well, if you go across here, when you hit that stump, you got to take a left and then skip across that slush, and you're going to hit solid ice. And then from that ice, you're going to go across. You're going to see that bank. You're going to go up that bank, you know, and so forth." And you're just following these guys, and they're on these skidoos with the wide skis. And dude, the natives are like a pack of wolves, dude. They just know it. It's cool about the natives is that they just know. They know every little tree, and you know, so. We make it across. We get to Unalakleet. We make it there, you know, late. I don't remember. Like, at one point when on our way to Unalakleet, Chris was like, "Hey, we shouldn't have any more water. We're good to go." So, once again, I'm sitting down. We're doing like 70 miles an hour, and all of a sudden it goes from white to black. And I'm like, what? And I see it looks like his, like a boat behind him. I see the wake and everything. We come across, and I'm like, what the hell was that? And he's like, yeah, I don't remember that. And I'm like, no more. Like, I'm done. Like, enough water. Yeah. You know, geez. So, yeah, we get to Unalakleet, and we go into this lady's house, and she makes us some stew, and she opens up her house to us, and everybody's sleeping everywhere. And next day we wake up, and away we go, and the villagers take us across, and we start going, and it's, you know, it's blizzard where you can't see here to the wall. And we're trying to make it all the way back to McGrath, and just forever, like 150 miles of either 1 foot whoops to 4 feet whoops, and just nasty.
Beating the crap out of yourself.
Oh, brutal. But like I said, at all point, like there was this one creek bottom that we came through on the way through. It was just snow. On the way back, it was complete water. So Chris had us cutting down tree branches to lay across so we could get across.
I remember watching this.
Yeah. And so Chris goes across it, and he gets a little zesty, and I'm like, okay, we need to go a little easy. So I think I went next. I just went kind of nice and easy. And then you had one of the Polaris engineers that came across and he hit a stump, dude. I thought he broke his wrist. Oh. I'm like, oh, he just smoked an A-arm. Roger came across and got a little stuck, but, you know, we eventually made it across and we make it to McGrath. And, you know, I had kept like pushing. I wanted to make the finish. The finish was the essence of the race.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Like coming through the climb arch, I had buddies, I had my wife, my kids, everybody was waiting at the finish line for us. You know, I'm like, oh, we got to make this. And, you know, as we kept going on, we were the last people. Like the racers are already gone. So it was pretty lonely out there. There was all the checkpoints were dead.
Sure.
You know, they left us some fuel. Once we got to McGrath, skipping through some of it, we get to McGrath and Roger's like, hey, we'll sleep for 2 hours and we'll go. I'm like, okay, you know, so we, that was like 20 hours. It took us like, I think it was 20 hours to make it from Unicleet to McGrath. It might've been 21. I can't remember exactly, but so I had, you know, we went to bed and, I was the first one up. I was up. Wide awake, got dressed. Everybody else is still sleeping. I'm thinking, we got to go. And in my head, you know, I'm trying to make out the math. I'm like, we're not making the finish. There's no way. And I had gotten dressed and I had fallen asleep on the couch waiting for everybody. And finally, one of the guys that woke me up, Smasher, hey, there's breakfast. And that was like, I think it was 10 a.m. And when I had figured out, man, I cried. It broke my heart. Like finishing the race at the amount of time, which, you know, we lost some sleds in Gullivan Bay. We lost 4 sleds there. That killed the whole day. We also got held up in Elam for a medevac issue. The Iron Dog held us there for 6 hours. So, you know, that was part of the problem. But to not make the finish was heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And sure. So then the next day, you know, we wake up. So it was 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock. We finally leave. And, damn, the whole race, I never broke anything. I finally broke a torsion spring. And then one of the Polaris engineers, I think, broke a torsion spring. So Chris Olds had to go all the way back to McGrath, which was an hour ride. He went back, got his torsion springs, came all the way back. We fixed those, and then we took off. And then right before the finish line, one of the other Polaris engineers broke a torsion spring. Oh. So he was hating it. As you got closer and closer, it seemed like forever and forever and forever. Yeah, yeah. And it was cold. It was, I think as we got closer, Chris Olds, on a 4-stroke, you know, he was hauling balls, and I was trying to keep up with him, you know, because I was so intrigued by him. But my suspension on the sled that Roger had given me wasn't quite set up for what we were doing. It was bottoming out so hard. Like, my left knee was a little swollen. You know, I skipped over a bunch of stuff. Chris almost, you know, drowned in a river on the way by Roan. Didn't see it at the last second. Luckily, he hit the brakes, tipped over. He didn't fall in the river. There's just so much. There's just so much that I had to skip over. But anyways, we finally get to the finish and like, you're done. You're just tuckered. I think I figured I was at 42 hours with 3 hours of sleep, 4 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
So you're pretty, you know, a zombie. And so you get there and you're just, I had so many friends and family and people, this guy, David Wagner, that just blew my mind. He had no reason to be there, but he just came to support us. He was a racer also and had offered so much. And
I feel like I've seen him on
Facebook. Oh, you have.
I'm friends with him on Facebook. Yeah.
Great guy. I mean, he was really cool, and poor Roger was beat. And so that's where we finished at Big Lake, and all these people are hugging us. And so it was kind of like done. Mm-hmm. And so my stepmother had come up to me and she was like, hey, you know, I saved a room for you and your wife to stay an extra night. Cause I was supposed to, that was Sunday. I was supposed to be home on Monday to work. And I was like, no, I'm going home. You know, this is it. We're done. And she's like, okay, you know, whatever. And then my wife had come up to me and said, hey, you know, you need to stay another night. We need to sleep. I'm like, no, we're going home. Like, so it was 6:33. We had to be at the airport by 10 o'clock to get on our flight at noon. And I was like, I'm fine. You know, I'm good. So we put everything up. I said my goodbyes to Roger and, you know, everybody. And away we went. Within 40 minutes of being on that car ride, dude, my hands swelled up. My legs, I couldn't feel my legs. Your adrenaline just drops because you're safe. I was a zombie. You know, we get up into the room. My wife's like a mom. Chris, we got to go. Get going. I couldn't function. Like, I was so tired. I was like, this is stupid, you know.
Yeah.
Dumb. I'm trying to pack my bag. I'm almost in tears because I'm so tired. We get in the cab and we go to the airport and my boys are trying to help me. And I'm like a walking zombie. And yeah, you know, I didn't know.
Wild.
Yeah, I just wanted to get home.
Yeah.
I just wanted to get home. My dad's there, one of my best friends from high school. You know, he'd come up to watch me finish. So, yeah, we get on the plane. We fly home. And my legs, like, I couldn't even stand up on the plane to get up off the plane. It hurt so bad. My wife was worried they were going to kick us off the plane because they thought I was drunk because I was weaving and wobbling so bad. So, yeah, that's the Iron Dog experience. But
my gosh. And you signed up to go again next year.
Yeah. But I think the ambassador class is different because when you're racing, you know, you're making it from Big Lake to – I think Chris and Tyson Johnson had told me from Big Lake to McGrath, you're doing it in like the pros, the fast guys are doing it in like 8 hours. So maybe I'm doing it in 10 hours rather than 16, 17 hours. So you have more time to sleep. I'm not saying it's easier, but as long as you don't crash or you know, do something like that. But it's just intriguing.
Sure.
If you can withstand the pounding of the Iron Dog and it's just all strategy.
You feel like it's something about like hitting yourself against nature, like Mother Nature, that just like drives you as a person 100%. To do that. Yeah.
Because between like Buckland and Kotzebue, there's nothing out there. So if something were to happen, man,
That's it.
Yeah, yeah, if there's like a ground storm or something, they're not getting a helicopter. I don't know how they could get a helicopter, but the Iron Dog's not gonna, obviously they've got this idea, you know, worked in and they'll figure it out. But there's nothing out there. You got a little shrubberies in between the creeks, but still, you're talking, there's nothing, and the snow of Alaska is just so sugary. There's just nothing out there. Like, the wind is, yeah. And there's no bottom. Like, when you're on the trail, it's nice and hard. You get off the trail, and it's 4 feet up to your waist, and there's nothing. Like, you know, sometimes you have a crust where you can walk on. No.
That's wild, dude.
Yeah, that's...
And the racers are just... Dude, they're just going balls to the wall. When I so 2-3 weeks or a month after the Iron Dog, I went back up to ride with Chris Olds and Tyson Johnson, and to do it at the race pace, like Chris let me borrow one of his sleds, suspension for the race, and to follow those guys, you know, you're doing 104 down the river, and it's incredible. Like, you're moving.
Yeah,
you know, at some points you're like, dude, if we wipe out, I hope I die because this is going to hurt a lot.
Oh, without a doubt.
A lot. Yeah. A whole lot. You know, and those guys have run that river so much that they know exactly where every little heave is and everything. You know, they know where the moguls are. But a few times I did some tank slapping. Like, I was like, oh, that was close. That was a little too close. Let's don't do that again.
Yeah. So going back next year, are you ambassador or are you racing?
I'm racing.
Oh,
man. I want in one time. If the goal is to complete, anything above Elite Eight is a success. Okay. You know, the first five or six teams, dude, these guys, they've got it dialed. You know, they're either locals and they run it a lot. You know, for me and my partner that we're going to do it with, you know, it's just too, especially as a rookie. I mean, you think that you can go up there and run this?
It's different.
No, it's just different. I mean, so Chris told me, if you have oh poops moment, like more than three times, you're going too fast. Like when I was following him and Tyson through these trees and we were moving pretty quick, which, you know, we all know GoPro doesn't show it. Like it's going, you know, you're going 40 miles an hour. Like you miss just a turn or something, it's over.
Yeah.
And he was like, this is how fast we'd go through the trees at all times. And that's moving, especially when you're doing 2,500 miles. You might look at it through the GoPros at 1 minute. You're like, oh, that's not that hard. But 2,500 miles, when you're coming back and you're at 1,800 miles and you're going through those whoops, at 50 miles an hour.
Fatigued, yeah, all of it.
Just fatigue, you know.
Compounding on, yeah.
Your sled's a little different. The snow's a little different. Like on the way up, I posted a mogul where I was hauling balls through this mogul section, and it was powder. On the way back, it was solid ice where the race sleds, where they would hit, they were on the throttle. So there was like 3 foot deep trenches, so your running boards would hit that ice every single time. So if you're in the back, you know, you're just getting the crap end of everything. So that's, you know, that's something to think about. And the funny thing was, so when I was up there with Tyson and Chris, at one point my sled detonated. Okay, so these guys were only doing 93 miles an hour. So now I've detonated. So I've slowed down. I've had to shut my sled off. I had to start it back up. For me to catch up to them, that means I've got to do 120 to catch up to them. So I immediately took off. Well, I tank slapped really bad. Like, I almost ate it through these moguls that were like 4 feet deep to the trees. And I finally figured, you know what, I'm not going to catch them. Like, that's over. That part is over. You're not making up that unless they screw up in front of you. So for the Iron Dog, for the racers, you know, like when you put on your stuff in the mountain gear, when you put on your knee pads, your elbow pads or whatever, you're like, okay, they're on. But in the Iron Dog, everything has to be precise, because if it's not, then that's 2 minutes that you have to spend undoing your pants, fixing your knee pad, fixing your boot, fixing your goggles. That's 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
2 minutes is, you know.
That's a long time.
Yep. Or your goggles, like my beard, my damn beard was tickling my ear one time, and I couldn't get it because you're your face mask, and I couldn't get my finger there, so I'm punching my helmet. Yeah. You know, Roger's like, gone. Yeah. So I'm like, well, I just have to tell myself it's not itching anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Or I had a
yeah.
piece of tape that was, every time I'd breathe, it sucked in my nose, and I'd.
It's the little things.
Yeah. Oh, man. So in the Iron Dog, everything has to be 100% at all times.
Oh, that's so wild, man. Holy smokes.
So from that experience and then leading up to this next year, this next race, is there anything that you are going to change in the realm of preparation? So preparation for prepping gear, prepping your mindset, prepping your, you know, physical fitness, like what from learning that experience and everything that you did, what's going to change in preparation for you leading up to next season?
Forearms.
Okay.
I'll be working on my forearms a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. Writing down, you know, you say I stand up a lot when I ride, but at 90 miles an hour, 80 miles an hour, you don't always stand up. Earplugs. I'll be wearing earplugs. I didn't wear earplugs, but forearms, middle of your back in between your shoulder blades, that I'll be working those out. As far as gear, so I had been talking to Mike Olds Mike Morgan, and he was saying that he wore one pair of gloves the whole trip. Well, as mountain riders, no, dude, I bring two, three, four pairs of gloves because they get wet.
Yeah.
But as an Iron Dogger, you're wearing the gauntlets, and you're not getting off your sled. You're not pulling on a ski a lot. Like your hands are solid inside there, so you're not getting wet. So like the guide gloves, I wore the guide gloves 1,800 miles. The only reason I changed was because my ding-dong rear of an end fell in the ocean and they got soaked and they never dried out. That, and then I was packing a lot of gear. Like I packed, you know, three sets of wool gear, three sets of base layer. Like you don't need that. Like you need two sets and then one extra gear that you have to carry as an athlete. You have to carry in a plastic bag. But other than that, I won't, you know, their bags are very small. Like they carry a sleeping bag, their stove, their matches, their headlight, you know, some extra gear, some extra gloves, some springs, some A-arms. That's about it. But other than that, you know, you're pretty lightweight because when you stop, you get to pull off your bag. So when you pull up to a checkpoint, you pull up and you pull off your bag, you're like, I'm done. And they stop the clock right there. Now, if you go back to your, like, let's say I forget my cell phone, I think if I understood it was a half hour increment. So they add a half hour. So how bad do you want your cell phone? You forget your cell phone cord, you forget your socks, you know, you're on the clock.
Everything's in that bag.
So, you know, you clip your bag off, you're like, done. And that's when it ends. You can't touch your sled again. You can't go back to your sled until you start in the morning.
Yeah.
You know, my other question was, why not go from McGrath all the way to Unicaleet? Like, just blow and go.
Oh, yeah.
But they were saying, you know, you get so tired, and they're right. You know, you get so worked and so tired. Now your time speed's down. Maybe you're the fastest in McGrath, but from McGrath to Unicaleet, maybe you're so tired that you slow down and you're breaking trail.
Yeah.
So there's a lot. I mean, like these racers are no joke. Like, you're not going from lower 48s and going up to Alaska and going, yeah, I'm going to top five this. And I think they said that no rookie has ever top five this ever in the history of Iron Dog.
Wow.
You got what would you say like the average day was, like as far as time wise?
I don't know what the pros were. I don't, but for us, I don't know that either.
I feel like my head would, like my, not even my head, just like my neck in general, I would just be like smoked, like with the helmet and just up and down, like just hitting the whoops and stuff.
But
like
the difference is that you know that when you ride here, you're like, okay, we've been in 6 hours, my next door, hey, Tyler, let's go home. When you're up there, you can't say, man, Tyler, you're I'm done.
Like, yeah.
let's pound sand, dude. We're done. Yeah. Like you have to go to fly. Like if you were to wreck your sled in Unicaleet, now you got to fly your sled out. Now you got to fly you out. So that's that's $3,000. You got to get everything out.
Yeah.
Like, so that's not an option. Like,
it's just
no joke. The more and more I think about it, the more and more intriguing it is. Like, I want to do it so bad. You know, and so Roger had given me an Iron Dog jacket before we did the race.
Mm-hmm.
And in my head, I'm like, well, that's not my jacket. I can't have that till we do the 2,500 miles. You can't say you did the Iron Dog and not finish it and wear the jacket.
Yeah.
That's all a false advertisement. And it's just been a dream for so long that I was like, I'm in. Yeah. Like, I'm ready to sell my mountain sleds and do this. You know, a lot of my sponsors, I've already talked to them. They're like, we're in. Like, let's do this.
Wow.
So
that's pretty wicked.
Hell yeah.
As long as we finish it, man. Yeah. Even if we're last, like there was two women that did it, and I have the most respect for them. They did it in. I was thinking one of the girls got stuck. Well, another group of guys didn't help them, so the other girl was a mile ahead of her. Well, she couldn't turn around because there's nowhere to turn around.
Yeah,
like the trees are so thick you can't turn around. So she had to walk a mile back to help her partner to get unstuck, and then they could go forward. Now that to me,
that's wild.
That's an iron dog.
Yeah,
that's. Yeah, because if you're stuck, I'm like, Ty, you're on your own, buddy. I'll be waiting. I'm going to have a fire, start digging, cutting. If you don't make it, I'm just going to shoot you. So,
yeah. I guess we won't put you down.
No.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so.
That's intense, man. That's an experience.
The mental strength on that is just.
Oh, yeah.
Insane. Do you do anything?
Adversity.
You think you're going to do anything to mentally prepare yourself for that?
No, because I am so mentally, I don't know, cocky or arrogant, but I'm so mentally focused that
you're sold on it.
I'm sold. Like to see, like I've talked to Acklestead and Tyler Johnson, Chris Olds, Mike Morgan. You know, these guys have been nothing but great to me, and to be where they're at, like to do this, it's just intriguing. I don't know if it's as intriguing to everybody else, but to do 2,500 miles across the state of Alaska through these villages and to come home and say, I did that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that to me is like, that's just nasty. You know, it's not 30 miles of some backcountry where, you know, some of the backcountry we do is pretty nasty, but sure. 2,500 miles.
That's some serious bragging rights.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it's just through 50 below and they were saying that this year was really good because through the farewell burn, it's normally dirt. So you get to go maybe 15 minutes and you got to stop and let your sled down 15 minutes, let your sled cool down because it's solid dirt. But this year it was snowed, but just some of the stuff like I can see it in my head and to explain it just doesn't make sense. But to actually think about, you know, 2,500 miles on a sled, you know, which was, you know, the normal guys do, I think they do it in 7 days, 8 days.
Yeah.
I mean, you're balls to the wall.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very respectable. That's crazy.
I'm in love.
Yeah, that's like going from, that is.
Mm-hmm.
That's like going from here to Miami, Florida on a sled. That's 2,554 miles.
Yeah. And I want to say that I think we did 2,800 with the back and forth from White Mountain to Gullivan Bay. Like back and forth, back and forth, back and forth.
That's insane. That doesn't tell you how big Alaska is in general, but that's a monstrous race.
It's just, I don't know, it's just, it's dumb.
Like it is kind of dumb. Yeah. But wicked. I mean,
the Iditarod in comparison?
I think it's half. I think they go up and back, just up. I think they just go up. Okay. I believe that's right. And I should know that because both my parents were dog mushers.
Okay.
But I think it's just up, stud.
That's super respectable, too.
Oh. So we got, on the way back, we got to take a little shortcut, actually, from Roan to Puntilla, and we took the Iron Dog Trail, which is, you know, you're not supposed to, but they let us do it. And it cut like 60 miles off. And is it 1,000?
Yeah, it's just shy. It's like it's 900. Right in between 900 and 1,000, and they start out of Anchorage and finish in Nome.
Yeah, and for dog mushers, that's just and to go through this. So to go through this on the way through, like I'm looking up, and you get to go through, and so there's like these little trails, these wooden bridges that your sled skis are just on the edge. Like you fall off, bloop, you're in the drink. But super cool. We got to go through this pass, and I wish we'd have got to do it in the day. We got to do it in the night, but. Pretty cool.
That's wild. Yeah.
Like, I'm ready to start tomorrow. Like, let's go. We're out. See you, boys.
Hell yeah.
938.
And to do it on a dog sled at whatever, 15 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And standing on there at 20, 30 below with the crosswind, and you're just staring at your dog's rear end.
Yeah.
No, man.
I've ridden in one of those sleds before.
And that's not only, like, cool experience. That's not just you and the machine, right? That's you and the dogs. Yeah. Like, that's a whole,
you have to,
it's a whole team of, yeah, that's wild, too.
Well, I was thinking from I think it was Koyak, man. So bad with names. I think Koyak to Unalakleet. We went through blowing sleet, rain, and then it was like a blizzard. I couldn't hear. I couldn't see here. I could barely see the back of Chris Old's head. I was just following the GPS, like the coordinates, because it was blowing so bad. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a mountain rider, you know, you guys are in mountains. You know, when you're hauling butt across something, you're worried about falling off a cliff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, he's just going. I'm like, dude, we're going to die. Like, this is it. Like, they're going to find me. Yeah. Local Sparks resident Chris Kallenbacher dies in Iron Dog falling off of a cliff. But, you know, in Alaska, it's pretty pretty flat. You know, you're at zero. Like, I'm looking at my GPS, and it's like -2 feet. I'm like, what?
Yeah. What? Yep. That's weird.
You know, and the sleds run like ridiculous.
Oh, I bet.
Oh, it's, I'm sure.
I think I had the sled up to 106 miles an hour. And I was trying to find it on my GoPro, but I can't find it. But, dude, stuff is just whizzing by, and, you know, you're watching it, and you're like, you know, once again, man, I hit something, it's over.
Oh, yeah.
Like, please let me die, please. Yeah. I don't want to die, but let me just end it right here.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. That's intense.
Huh. Yeah, that's the Iron Dog experience, so.
Crazy enough to go again.
I'm excited. So when you guys come up there this February, and do it. So what you guys need to do is come up and do a sled send podcast, like, for the beginning, and get some of the champions in there and do, hey, give me 15 minutes. Like, what's your take? What are you guys going to do this year? Smasher's out here to beat you. You know, you think that's going to happen.
Yeah, what are you going
to
do about Smasher, huh?
Look out.
What's the sabotage plan?
yeah, exactly.
I'm just kidding.
All you got to do is play it safe and smart.
Yeah. Man, what an experience. Thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah.
That shines a lot of light on it.
Yeah.
How are we on? Okay.
No kidding.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm a big deal.
So, so I think we'll cut off right there. And the next episode we'll get into some other stuff. So putting you on the spot again. Another sled talk question.
Okay.
Maybe
you guys should have to ask it.
You got it.
Don't do that. I hate it when you do that. How many times it back to me? So
how many people could think they could do the Iron Dog?
That's a good one, too.
That's a really great question.
What do you think, how many people think they've got? I mean, I'm not trying to brag it up, but how many people think they've got what it takes to do the Iron Dog 2,500 miles across the state of Alaska, not knowing what's around the neck? And you're going from dirt to tundra to open water. And you're not talking open water like, you know, 20 feet. You're talking a mile. Like, I've talked to some of these guys. They've water skipped, not knowing where the end is. And just like, you know, because basically, so like if we're going to move this microphone because it's out of my way. But let's say that, you know, this is the bay here, and you take a straight shot. This is like Gullivan Bay. So this is Gullivan over here. This is White Mountain here. So if you were to cut across, that saves you 2 hours.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And this is all water. Now, if you go across this way, you've just lost the race. You literally lost the race because this guy's going to do it in 30 minutes. You're going to spend 2 hours going across. So you're saying I'm going to die winning it or I'm going to live and lose it. That's what you're saying. No. That's what it comes down to. Because I was asking a couple of the pros, like, hey, if that was water, they're like, dude, we pin it. What if
there's no choice.
Yeah.
Like, you don't think about it. You just do it.
Like, seriously, like, I'd probably stop back here and be like, hey, let's wait and we'll see if, like, Chris Olds and Mike Morgan, they go across. Oh, they went across? Okay, we'll follow them. Oh, they sunk? Okay, keep going. But no, seriously, I mean, this is you know, win the race and die, possibly, or lose the race and finish. That's what it comes down to.
Oh my gosh!
And that's some the
serious
spot.
Decisions.
That's the spot where I think
it's a mental. It's like that's
knowing me and the way my body is. I'm going to pick the stupid line and go, dude.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can make it.
Yeah,
because that's just me. Where I wish I wasn't like that. Because, you know, I don't want to die. Yeah. Not yet. Dude, I'm on sled send.
Come on. Hell yeah.
I got another podcast to do.
Oh, man. One or two more.
Oh, boy. Yeah, that was a good question. Shade, do you got one?
No.
Come on.
That's so, why I already
helped so, it off to you.
Oh, man.
Oh,
I think I have one for
Shane
the next. I have the next one. Oh, well, I don't know about that.
He's going deep here. Like, he's thinking.
I have one for the next podcast, for sure.
You're like kind of Ice Cube. You're so deep, put her.
Yes.
No, we can't say that.
Um,
boy. Should Tyler and I go get tattoos tonight?
Yes. yep, they should.
I'm down. You got a tattoo artist here in town?
No, in Tri-Cities
I would do it.
I'll get one with Smasher.
I'd be down.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, I do. No, I do a Tyler too.
We need to go get some sleds. Maybe on our wrist or something. Sledson.
Having such an itch to get one. I don't even have a tattoo, but
really,
I don't. Yeah, it'd be the a virgin.
We need
tattoo.
You have to get the one on your shirt.
No. right above the back. I would say right above the back. Dude, lower back.
Yeah. I would get the sled on my wrist.
Yeah.
That would be kind of dope.
That would be pretty sick.
Yeah. Do the double S?
Yeah. Or that. Yeah. That one would be pretty cool.
Jeff, can we go live on this? We need a tattoo artist here over at Sledson ASAP stat.
Get here.
Yeah. I bet Alex Everett would pull up. He's the guy that did all my ink.
Let's get some tattoos. I'm down. Oh, yeah, make it happen. He's thinking about it now.
Yeah, he kind of is, isn't he?
Yeah.
You still have a question?
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking like
easy.
No,
easy.
Something along the lines of like. I just don't know if it's too complex of a question. Like my mind goes to. What would your like. I don't know if it's dumb or too simple, but like what would your, if you were to sign up and run this race, like what would your gear list look like? Like as far as your combination of which climb pieces you would take, or if you're not a climb guy, you know, what would your stack be?
That's a good question because.
Well, there's so many different
options. And with the weather and. Boy, I'll tell you what, I wore every piece between Buckland and Kotzebue. I wore every piece of climb gear I had.
Yeah.
And it, you know, 20 to 30 miles an hour riding, 40 miles an hour, and with the side wind, whew.
Yeah.
Like I was holding onto the bars so tight and that my hands, sorry, not to cut you off.
No.
That my hands were, you know, like when they get so hot, like mm-hmm. I still have scaly skin there. It's not from anything else. But they were
just start calling you Jeff.
They were glossy because I was so cold that I would hold onto the handlebars and think, okay, this is what my whole body feels like. And you would squeeze the sled with your legs thinking you'd get warmer, mm-hmm. but you wouldn't. And it has nothing to do with like climb gear is the best. Like I'm telling you 100%, like without a doubt, it is the best gear, but it was that bone chilling with that Arctic cold. And I'm wearing that Arctic, I can't even say it, Arctic face mask.
The balaclava?
Yeah, whatever. Yeah. I call it the Greek name, baklava.
Dude, have you ever had baklava?
Oh, yeah. My best friend's Greek.
It rips.
I can speak Greek.
Really? What?
Yeah, I can't say it. Pademu pipu putana. But anyways, yeah.
Siri.
It's bad. But anyways, yeah. So my hands got so glossy because it was so cold. So that's a great question, honestly.
Yeah. That or my next one would be, like if you could only, like obviously you guys have meals and stuff along the way, but if you could only pack one snack through that whole, you know, 7, 8, 9 day, 10 day trip, what's the one snack that you would bring with you for the Iron Dog?
So on that, when we left McGrath to Puntilla, it was 13 hours. So we ate in McGrath, and when we left, I didn't eat a whole lot. So I had these coffee beans from my buddy. I'm so sorry. Espresso beans. But he gave me these chocolate-covered espresso beans.
Oh, sure.
And I would eat them, like, a little at a time. When I got to Puntilla after 13 hours, I was so hungry. I ate two bags of M&Ms before I sat down, like the two bags of peanut M&Ms.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Shoved them in my mouth like I was dying. The chick was like, "You all right?" I was like, "I'm so hungry." I ate two bags of M&Ms. Not in order, two bags of potato chips, 5 Powerade, 6 glasses of water, 6 snickerdoodle cookies, and 2 bowls of pasta and sausage.
She's looking at you like
because I was so hungry.
Yeah.
I was starving. And your body craves carbs. Mm-hmm.
Oh, sure.
Like craves carbs. And the amount of water, like not to keep going, I mean, I keep going forever, but no, the amount of water and the carbs that you – It's nuts. Like you just
crazy.
I was going to say rice. Yeah, Rice Krispies or something.
You wouldn't bring rice cakes?
I was going to say, I feel like Jeff would be a rice cake.
You want to bring something that doesn't get hard because at 40 below, everything turns like I was thinking about bringing those, the honey graham cracker, the honey thing, the honey bee.
Yep, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, but those chocolate covered beans and gummy bears.
Yeah, what made you choose gummy bears?
My buddy Anthony Alberti does those death hikes.
Mm-hmm. And that's what it's good to hit.
And he said, take those because it's quick sugar. Don't eat beef jerky because it just sits in your stomach. So I would pack my – and I couldn't – and with the beard, cool beard. Thanks, bearded craftsman. I would shove my mouth. I could pull the hair apart, and I would shove as many of those gummy bears I get in my mouth. So I didn't chew up my cheeks, and I would just suck on them as we were riding, hoping I wouldn't choke to death and die. Like, dude, Smasher is dead. You gotta keep going.
Death by gummy bear.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Thanks, Habero.
Hey, and Dustin did get stuck outside of Ruby also in the overflow.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's on the internet.
Liability.
Yeah. Dustin, man. I'll probably lose my sponsorship. Derailed.
Do you have a
slip question? I don't. I have one for the next one, though.
Okay. All right. So I want to end this episode in a unique way. First off, I want to say, Sled Talk listeners, thank you guys for tuning in. This has been an awesome part two with Chris Kaltenbacher.
Yeah.
We're about to rip through another one. But I would like to end this episode. Is this camera still going, Jeff? Smasher, I would like for you to do the honors of being the first person to sign the Sledson banner here in the office.
Let's go, Smasher.
Dude. Wherever you want, however big you want, I would suggest just from a focal point
right above the D and in between the S.
These?
Yeah,
these.
Should I sign it big or small?
How big? Go for it.
Oh my God, it's beautiful.
Oh, Smasher, number one.
Oh, you know what? I'm going to put Team 77. It's my Iron Dog number.
There we go.
I like it.
Heck yeah.
You know what? I mean,
there it is.
There it is. We gotta do a live.
Are you going live or just doing a story?
Oh, we got to do a story, but it's got to be live. Apparently you got a discard.
Last one.
So here we are live with the Sled Film guys.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, geez.
We got to do it again.
Take two.
No way.
Take two.
Here we are with the Sledson guys.
Hey,
what's up?
I'm the first person to sign a Sledson banner.
Top dog, baby. Right.
Top dog. Oh. The Iron Dog.
Top dog, a.k.a. Iron Dog.
That was good.
Team 7.
A little
long, man.
A little longer good.
Oh, perfect. I don't care. That was an hour and 15.
I think that's
protectfully living life with no regrets. I can't design her when I get dressed. Hey. Summertime on winter fresh, fresh. I put her legs behind her head. Night night she gonna bed. Bye bye. Every day it's a new test. I just keep chasing these chicks.